coming up on KSDP News, St. Paul has a new greenhouse, and the state is considering new ways to deal with derelict vessels. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on Thursday, November 10th, 2016. A new majority caucus formed yesterday in Alaska's legislature. For the first time in 24 years, the State House will have a Democratic Speaker, Representative Bryce Edgemond of Dillingham. He's one of five people moving from the Republican-led majority to a new, predominantly Democratic majority. Edgemond says the need to address the state's fiscal crisis brought the caucus together.
Everybody, I think I could speak for virtually every legislator, wants to preserve the basic services that we provide to our communities and our constituents. And the issue, you know, how do we go forward and get that done, is something that we all need to work together and resolve.
The other caucus switchers will be in leadership too. Homer Republican Paul Seaton and Nome Democrat Neil Foster will be House Finance Committee co-chairmen. Kodiak Republican Louise Stutz will be the Majority Whip, and Anchorage Republican Gabriel Ledoux will be the House Rules Committee Chairwoman. Current Minority Leader Anchorage Democrat Chris Truck will also become the Majority Leader. It remains to be seen how the new House caucus will work with the continuing Republican-led Senate majority, but Edgemond says they are united in wanting a comprehensive fiscal plan. Seaton says they'll look to include at least four pieces of a solution: further budget cuts, making an annual draw from permanent fund dividend earnings to support the budget, introducing a broad-based tax such as an income or sales tax, and limiting the permanent fund dividend.
And it needs to go this year. We don't want to wait until next year. We'd be out of money, first of all, and the second thing is then you'd be getting into another election season.
Edgemond won re-election in House District 37 on Tuesday with a 58-42% margin against William Weatherby, a Republican from King's Salmon. Edgemond will be starting his sixth term in the State House. When you think of the Pribilof Islands, what food comes to mind? Probably not produce. But the people of St. Paul Island are working to change that. With a federal grant, they've built a greenhouse, and it's so productive, they're giving away the produce. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more.
St. Paul's greenhouse isn't what you'd imagine. There's no big glass structure. All the windows are covered from the inside. It's underneath the city's grocery store, on the first floor of a building. It's hydroponic. Blue and red LED lights hang suspended above the plants. Pumps fill the room with white noise.
Just trying to find a big one.
Dallas Roberts manages the greenhouse. He drops by on a recent afternoon to harvest six heads of lettuce.
Yeah, he's been growing for at least close to a month and a half. And they're fantastic.
The 19-year-old grew up on the island. He says the availability of fresh produce is a big deal in St. Paul. There's only one shelf for it in the grocery store. Lauren Devine is the co-director of ECO, the tribe's environmental conservation office. She says problems with cargo shipping mean that by the time vegetables hit the shelves, they're already rotten.
I mean, we ran out of like carrots and potatoes and onions that are cold cellar, long storage type vegetables, and they were spoiling and going bad.
St. Paul's greenhouse was built with more than $400,000 in federal grant money. The goal is to produce high-quality, affordable food for the community. At first, the idea was to build a traditional, all-glass greenhouse. But when Devine joined the project, she scrapped those plans because she didn't think it was sustainable. A box greenhouse kit would have to be barged in, and because St. Paul is volcanic, the same would be true for fertilizer and topsoil.
It took a lot to change everybody's mind from thinking of, like, they were going to see this glass building to coming into a hydroponics operation and seeing the lettuce grow without soil in this very different, almost alien-looking way.
The cost of running the hydroponic greenhouse is so low, they're giving away the produce. The electric and water costs are covered by the Aleut Community of St. Paul tribal government. Plants can grow inside the greenhouse year-round. Right now, they're producing about 60 heads of lettuce a week. Plus, there's tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, cilantro, and more. There's even an outdoor garden with potatoes and kale. Devine says kids are some of the biggest advocates for the greenhouse. They even ask their parents to get lettuce.
When you can sit down and have a meal with rutabaga and seal and potatoes and carrots, and it's all coming from St. Paul, then it really shifts their view of subsistence too. It can be all food. You know, it can be all the food that we grow, and I can grow this at my house, or I can come down to the garden and harvest it, and it's from here and it's our food.
There have been problems. The heat in the greenhouse is provided by the grocery store above. When the business adjusts the temperature, it can kill the crops. But demand for the produce is so strong, Devine has plans to expand. She has her eyes on a new warehouse space that could fit a greenhouse twice the size of the current one. That may allow Eco to sell the extra to Trident, the local fish processing plant, for their salad bar. For now, the greenhouse staff gives away the vegetables. They can donate to the food bank and share with elders. Remember those 6 heads of lettuce Dallas Roberts cut? A few minutes after he harvests them, he delivers them to the local tavern.
You might have to wash it, but okay. They're the best ones we've got.
The cooks will use it for tomorrow's dinner. Thanks. Indian tacos. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in St. Paul.
State agencies, harbor masters, and communities around the state want stronger laws on abandoned and derelict vessels. The Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators proposed legislation to Governor Bill Walker's office last month that would make it easier to find vessel owners and hold them accountable. KSTK's Aaron Bolton has the story.
The Harbor Masters Association has been working with government agencies as well as native and environmental organizations to develop the proposal. In a nutshell, it would require titles on all boats that are currently required to register with the state. It would also create a derelict vessel tracking program and make it a misdemeanor offense to abandon a boat.
We need to make some changes to the law so that it empowers the state agencies and the local governments and even private landowners to protect themselves from derelict vessels.
That's Brian Hawkins, Homer's harbor master and vice president of the Harbor Masters Association. Hawkins says the state can't ignore the problem. Several derelict vessels show up on shores, sloughs, and in other waterways around the state each year. These boats are expensive to clean up and pose safety and environmental hazards. Hawkins says the problem is growing. He noted that Bethel has about 40 barges in Steamboat Slough.
These are 200-foot-plus vessels that have been basically dumped there.
Statewide, the issue is harder to get a handle on. No one knows just how many ships are lying around. The legislation would create a Department of Natural Resources-run derelict vessel program that would track at-risk and abandoned boats. Anyone who sees a derelict vessel or denies an at-risk boat harbor access would be able to report them.
Now, these reporting forms would be done online, and the report is sent in, and then the database is generated, and pretty soon we end up with, you know, points on the map that give us real numbers for how big the current situation is.
The program would be state-funded. Current boat registration would go up $6 in 2017 and continue increasing every 3 years to help fund the program. Hawkins says the proposed legislation also clears up the process to dispose or sell an impounded vessel. Some of those proceeds would go to the program after covering impoundment costs. Hawkins says derelict vessels have become an issue for 2 primary reasons. It's hard to track down owners, and even if you do, it's hard to hold them accountable.
Because what we find when we have a derelict vessel is oftentimes is that just there's this broken paper trail for ownership. And then you get into large vessels, they're registered through Coast Guard. And so documentation is, you know, the process there. We find the same thing.
All motorized boats are required to be registered with the state. Hawkins says some owners don't register vessels, and enforcement can be an issue in such a large state. Derelict boat owners may also remove registration numbers, including an imprinted hull ID number. That's a number all boat manufacturers are required to brand into the hull of boats and is required to register a vessel in Alaska. A title program would be implemented under the proposed legislation to tighten up the registration process. Hawkins says the push for a title system would create a better paper trail. If the legislation is passed as is, owners of derelict boats could be convicted of a misdemeanor.
Class B misdemeanor to abandon a vessel on state or private or city property. And there was a maximum 90-day sentence and a $5,000 to $10,000 fine.
Petersburg Harbor Master Glory Ann Wollen says the penalty would enable Southeast Harbors to have one more thing to hold over boat owners. She says most boat ownership in Petersburg's harbor is local, making it easier to find boat owners. But when boats are left, it can be costly.
You know, we just got done demolishing a 40-foot boat that was left and abandoned in our harbor and sank, and so I had to have it hauled out, and there it sat for 4 or 5 years waiting for the owner to come back and retrieve it and settle up, and he never did, and then he just kind of dropped off the map.
Wollen says the price tag to take care of the vessel was around $5,000. She was happy the boat was small enough to take care of.
So if you start having a 100-footer, then all of a sudden, you know, we don't have the facilities here to deal with that. So then you have to end up taking it down south or to a place that does have the facilities, and that is a huge expense.
The legislation would also require boats over 35 feet to have insurance. An unclearly outlined initiative included would be a fund dedicated to cleaning up derelict boats and taking vessels that owners can't afford to dispose of. Hawkins says tightening up laws and getting a grasp on the current issue is only part of the problem.
You know, you can't just say, well, that's a derelict vessel and it can't go here.